Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Mini Crush Monday with Charles W. Chuck Bryant speaking, and I have Noel Bryan on the line. Noel, can you hear me?
Noel Bryan? I love this.
I just say Bryan. Noel Bryan.
You kind of did.
God damn it, Noel.
It's okay. And I tell you, I say this often, sometimes your opening has a certain cadence to it. Today it had the cadence of an auctioneer. Like, hey, everybody, welcome to Money Yard Monday. Sold.
You ever been to an auction like that?
I have been to an auction of horse sperm.
Whoa. All right, let's talk.
It was Augusta, Georgia, my hometown. I used to work for public radio, and I would cover various things. And we have this very popular event called the Augusta Futurity, which is a horse event where they, you know, jump over shit. And then there's all these like adjacent events, and one of them was a horse auction for not actual horses, but breeding rights to horses.
Okay.
And what you're actually buying is semen.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. That's exactly what I thought it would be.
Yeah, that's what it is. It wasn't just for funsies. It was definitely like, and the shit was, you know, expensive because it was like, you know, the semen of a prized Palomino or whatever.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Well, that's amazing, Noel Bryan. I love it.
Thanks, Chuck Brown.
And since you brought up horses, I might as well plug my friend's new project called Heart Horse. My dear friend Meredith from college and beyond is, or college forward is what I mean by that.
Yeah.
She is an equestrian and loves horses since she was a little girl, and they have helped her in her life. So she launched this website called Heart Horse, where they tell these great stories about people and their horses. And if you're into horses, you should go to Heart Horse. Check it out. It's really lovely stuff. And
that
Meredith is
lovely.
Awesome.
Cool.
One of my great, great friends. All right, so Noel, we're going to get it going. We're going to jump right on in today. We have a couple of segments. I asked the Crushers yesterday, what is your favorite New York movie or TV show? In that it really just nails what New York is all about and like. And as also said, if you haven't been to New York, maybe let us know if your pick is the New York you might imagine is what New York is. Does that make sense?
It does. It's interesting, too, because it's like, New York is easier to kind of sum up in a movie, I think, than say LA, because LA is just so sprawling and all over the place. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's not one LA, and there's not one New York either, but New York is a little more encapsulatable. That's a word I just made up.
I think I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
LA movies, like you can have your Get Shorties and your LA Stories and your movies that kind of skewer Hollywood and that whole LA thing, but then you can do Paul Thomas Anderson in The Valley. A completely different LA.
It is.
Or, you know, movies, you know, kind of depends on, like you said, it's so spread out on where you are in LA. Because mm-hmm. it can be very different. But New York's New York, you know?
It's true. That's a good question. I'm trying to think. Do you have one that pops to mind, Chuck?
Well, I know one that we both agree on is High Maintenance.
Yeah. Well, that's such a good, what's the word I'm looking for? A good kind of like frame for just like exploring different aspects of the city and the different types of people that live there. And,
very, you know, accurate even, and real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good one for sure.
Love it. But we're going to start with Catherine Brenack says, I'm not sure I'd try to describe a city half the size with one movie, but Panic in Needle Park or Taxi Driver seems accurate for the time period based on what I've heard from people who grew up there.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. One that comes to mind for me is the movie Bad Lieutenant with Harvey Keitel. It's very bleak, but I'll tell you, it's interesting because it's a movie that came out in the 90s, but in the 90s, New York still looked like the New York of like the 70s. Mm-hmm. It was very graffitied up and like kind of like raunchy and edgy. And now it's been a lot more sanitized and kind of cleaned up. And so when you see Bad Lieutenant, even though you're watching a movie that looks like, you know, that feels very 70s, it was absolutely shot in the 90s, which I think is interesting. Because I think I've mentioned I grew up going to New York a lot and having a lot of free reign to kind of like explore it as a very young kid. Looking back on it now, I'm like, God, that's
so cool.
Crazy. But yeah, so I very special place in my heart, in my life, that city.
Yeah, I love it. I miss it, man.
I remember that. I remember that era. When it was much more sketchy. But yeah, God, I miss it too, so much.
Yeah, my first trip to New York was in 1991, I think.
Mm.
And in college, I think like sophomore year in college, or maybe junior year. And it was everything I thought it would be. And that was still when it was sort of, you know, the meatpacking district and that side of town was really kind of run down and gross. And the Times Square still had peep shows and it was not cleaned up yet. And, you know, it's interesting when people sort of yearn for the days when a place was kind of a shithole.
Right.
I think there's a middle period, like the 80s in New York were truly dangerous and kind of gross and awful. And then I think the 90s, it was better, but still had some of the grit before it was completely cleaned up. I get what people mean by losing its character. But also, it's like, no, it's great when it was had more rats and crime. That's also kind of silly, you know?
Love rats and crime. but not your, like, charming ratatouille rats. These are, like, seriously gnarly, you know, rabies-infected rats.
That's right. Michael John says, Goodfellas, the most mostly suburban and outer borough New York City. As a native, I can honestly say no other movie has gotten it quite as right. Yeah. Where was Goodfellas? Was that Long Island, Staten Island?
That's a good question. You know, I feel like it had to have been. No, is it not Jersey? I really don't know. It's not something that they make a big to-do about.
I mean, I've only seen it 25 times. I should know this.
What's the zoo that they go to with the alligator? Is that like the Brooklyn Zoo?
Oh, I feel
like
shit. I don't know.
The Brooklyn or the Bronx Zoo?
I forgot about that scene.
There's like a lion. They throw a guy in with the lion.
They feed a body to... zoo animals.
Alligators, something like that. Anyway, but yeah,
I'm blanking on all of it now.
I feel like it's the Bronx Zoo.
Yes, I bet you're right. Teresa Barker says, "Not a movie, but pretend it's a city with Fran Lebowitz, quintessential New York City, and makes me ache to be there." Yes, Teresa, I have been. We have watched a couple of episodes of Pretend It's a City, and I like it quite a bit. Fran Lebowitz is great, national treasure. She's the I'd love to see her and Larry David sit down and have a conversation.
Oh, God, you're right. She is very Larry David. Chuck, have you seen Painting with John?
No, still have not seen that.
I would recommend it. I think you'd enjoy it. It's this guy,
John Lurie.
John Lurie, who is in a lot of the Jim Jarmusch films. He's just kind of this like weird, out there, cool, kind of like almost like a proto beatnik type dude.
Yeah.
And he's just hanging out in his crazy pad in the Caribbean somewhere, painting and talking about life. And it's very like, you know, meta and self-referential and probably should never have come to exist, but he happened to make it just for his own edification and showed it to somebody. I think it was Will Ferrell's producing partner, who's the director, whose name is escaping me right now. And he like loved it and showed it to
Adam
HBO.
Adam McKay.
And then HBO was like, here, you got yourself a show. And it feels very much like that. Like it just was kind of willed into existence by this guy's own just like creativity.
Well, if you do like that, Nolan, I don't know why I haven't, when you mentioned that before, not mentioned this in return. That is a take on the series he had in 1991 called Fishing with John.
I've heard of it. I've not seen it.
Which was fantastic, where John Lurie would literally just take one person fishing. Tom Waits, Dennis Hopper, Willem Dafoe. I think Matt Dillon was on one of them. Very, very, very fun show. Jim Jarmusch was in one.
Got it.
Good stuff. Get two dudes in a boat. And that's sort of the premise. A small boat. All right, let's move on here to New York again. Dan Trubati. I always say your name wrong, Dan. Sorry. I've never been to New York. And I know it was filmed in L.A., but I personally refuse to believe that the New York in Seinfeld isn't 100% accurate, even now. That's funny.
It's one of those things, too, where it's like, how does a stand-up comedian afford this apartment? or like, you know, like whatever.
Oh, all
like,
of them.
All of them.
The Friends?
Yeah, Friends, the same. Yeah,
I think that was one of their, I think it was Monica's grandmother's apartment, though. At least they tried to explain it. Because there's no way, you know, in the West Village. Come on. Anna Shrestha, one of our old friends, says, I love the weird, quirky version that Broad City shows. Yeah, totally. Jennifer Mudge has never been, but when I think of New York, it's got a Sex and the City vibe, and I know the apartments are way smaller.
Yeah, they definitely are. Kids is a good one. Kids is a very raw, like real. Those are all actual, you know, kids that real like kids. Ran in those circles and all kind of guerrilla style shot, and very much an accurate depiction of New York during those times.
That could have been you, Noel, scampering around as a teenager.
Scamping around, breaking into swimming pools.
Trying to make out.
Oh, yeah.
Making out. Angelo Bacco says, movie-wise, maybe some of Spike Lee's old stuff, like She's Gotta Have It or Do the Right Thing. Yeah, Do the Right Thing, I think, was a pretty good depiction of Brooklyn of the day. Mm-hmm. Gail the Danger Oven says, Ghostbusters, 100%. Never been to New York, but since I grew up watching that movie, if New York isn't like that, I'm going to be real pissed off. Yeah, that was a pretty realistic New York, I think, for what it was.
Yeah, New York absolutely overflowing with ghosts. No question about it.
Brittany Story, one of our old friends, says, Brittany runs a marathon has been pretty similar to my own experience of a youngish person finding their way in New York.
Named Brittany.
Yes, the city can be harsh and a bit brutal, especially when you feel lost, but it also feels full of possibility and wonder.
Sure.
Yes, totally.
Chuck, I don't know how you feel about that. You lived in New York maybe not. You lived in LA.
I lived in Jersey for 3 years and spent all my time in New York.
For sure. And I grew up, like I said, going to New York all the time. And I had, you know, this like aspirational thing where I was like, I want to live in New York. And that didn't happen. But, you know, for work, thankfully, I've been able to travel there a lot before, you know, COVID. And I've realized and completely made peace with the fact that I do not want to live in New York anymore. I just want to go there for a while and then come back home to my home in Atlanta, which is much more my speed, because it is brutal. And it is like a grind. Like it really feels like you're just scrapping just to like get from the store back to your apartment, or like
it's a tough city.
Yeah.
And I think there's a certain age you reach where you give up on that dream of living in New York for kind of the reasons you mentioned, where you're like, you know, I'm good to visit. And hey, we get to visit, you know, during normal times, you know, 4, 5, 6 times a year.
Yeah.
For work, which is the best. Someone else pays for it.
Totally. I mean, dude, there was a time, you know, I was going like twice a month, you know, before COVID, like just because of taking meetings and stuff. And I think it'll probably not return to that cadence, but I do hope it does come back, because I basically have a whole New York family of like a friend group now. And I miss them.
I love it. I miss them too. My niece Reagan is there, and I miss seeing her for sure. Let me see here. Aaron Cooper said Ghostbusters as well. We got Matthew Fober chimed in with high maintenance fave and reminiscent of the times I spent visiting friends from the Midwest who had relocated there. Erica Z says Lena Dunham series Girls. To be fair, whenever I went to visit friends, they all lived in Brooklyn, so they had similar living situations. Yeah, Girls was sort of like high maintenance. I thought it was a really accurate version of that New York. I love that show. I'm always on record as saying Girls was one of the great, great shows. One of the most well-written shows ever. I don't know why I got bagged on. People don't like Lena Dunham, I think.
She just did some stuff in the press that was a little abrasive, but I think that you either can totally be annoyed at her for that stuff, or be like, yeah, you go, and don't be like a predictable kind of wallflower. So I respect her as an artist and as a person, but sometimes she does rub me a little bit the wrong way. But I think she's very talented.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. And I think she, it seems like some of this, like, genuinely more controversial things that happened were after Girls.
Yes.
Or maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think that's about right.
Anyway,
I will say the thing about Girls that always bugged me, and I thought it was good and I enjoyed watching it, but it just felt like a very privileged perspective, you know, of like what it's like to live in New York. And a lot of those characters I just found not very relatable, you know, or not very sympathetic, because they're just kind of like their problems are very, surfacey kind
tough
of
characters,
you know?
To love sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I get it. Jake Dingler, I don't think we know Jake. Hi, Jake, says, Rent. Yes, originally a play. Yes, the play was better. And no, I've never been to New York, but that movie made my 15-year-old queer self believe there was something better than the rural outskirts of Cincinnati. I love that, Jake. It's good stuff when a movie can give someone feel like they have a place that they fit in when they might not fit in where they are. It's good stuff. Power of movies and plays. Kanem Truax says, Russian Doll. Yeah.
Yeah.
Parks and bodegas, eccentric people, artists and jerks. It's all there.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. I love that show.
That's one I didn't finish, but I very much liked what I saw. It was, it just, you know, it has a certain repetition to it. That's sort of the point. But I just, for some reason, it didn't,
I loved it.
Didn't bring me in to finish it. But I think I saw like 4 or 5 episodes.
Yeah, I can't wait for the next stuff. And I finished Search Party, by the way. I don't think I ever followed up on that. I blazed through Search Party.
Cool.
One of my fastest binges, because Emily bailed on it after a little bit, but she wanted to know still what was happening, so I was kind of just recapping.
Yeah.
But just I blazed through that show.
You liked it?
I loved it, man. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Very cool.
Our old friend, Ethan Anastasio, says, in Ghostbusters, when Lewis Tully has chased them all by the Hellhound at Tavern on the Green, all those diners look up for a moment and then go right back to their meals. Most New York moment in cinema history.
That's a good point.
That's Ethan Yavin, of course. I'm just kidding about Anastasia.
Unshakable.
Unflappable New Yorkers.
Exactly.
You're not going to ruin my $100 meal.
Nope.
Alex Perez is the Warriors during COVID-19 times. Sometimes it's still a struggle to commute safely on the subway. I mean, New York, the crime has gone up. It's been a little crazy to see some of the stuff that's happened over the past year. Like these sort of random attacks and things that you didn't see for a long time in New York. It's a little scary and disheartening.
Yeah, for sure.
Ryan Lee says, What We Do in the Shadows. They really nail Manhattan and Staten Island. That's good stuff. Steve McGrath says, Sweaty Bruce Willis and Sam Jackson in that Die Hard movie they did there.
Bring
back memories of riding the trains in the summer. Totally, man.
That's a very summery New York movie, and I have a very distinct memory because that was, you know, around the time that I was there all the time, and I believe I even maybe saw that while I was in New York. There's a place, I don't think it's there anymore, it's called something different, but it was called Gray's Papaya, and it has a hot dog place.
Sure.
They put like papaya on the hot dogs. And I remember it was underneath a mattress place called Sleepy's, which maybe is still there. It's somewhere off of Times Square, but it's very distinctly featured in the movie. And I remember thinking how cool I was because I knew that location.
Right.
I was like, at the time. Yeah.
Our old friend Jimmy Kuykendall agrees with us on High Maintenance. Don't think there's a show that better represents any city or diverse population. High praise. Indeed.
Indeed.
Matthew Hunter says, I just watched Dog Day Afternoon. Definitely part of the gritty 70s genre. Michael McGree says, I like the New York from Arthur. Well, Michael, Arthur is one of my favorite all-time comedies. I'm just dying for someone to pick that on Movie Crush.
That's with Dudley Moore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a very big movie for me as a kid. Saw it over and over and over and over on HBO.
Got it.
Joshua Hall says, Escape from New York. Yeah. Another high maintenance vote from Zach Lowe. And let me finish up here with this. Andrew Cotney says, Master of None, the Aziz Ansari Netflix show, was pretty good. Yes,
sure.
I loved.
Sure.
I think they might be doing more of those now. I think it was just announced after a long break.
That sounds right.
I think they're coming back for a new season, which makes me really happy because Master of None is one of the great, great shows. All right, Noel, we're going to wrap it up with a little segment called
Chuck's Holes.
Oh, I get a chance to redeem myself from that debacle.
You do,
last one.
And you know you have to keep score too.
Oh, God damn it.
Most difficult part of this whole experience.
I don't have my handy dandy score sheet. It's okay. It's fine. Okay.
You don't have your custom made score keeping pad?
Hold on. No, I don't have it. I don't have it on me right now, but here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put, I've got it. I've got my Chuck's Holes list in the notes app. So what I'm going to do is put the little checkbox next to them. And if you get one, I'm going to check it. If you don't, I'm not going to check it. And then I'm going to count up the check marks. Does that work?
Yes.
Great. Making sure I understand the concept of keeping score. Sometimes I just have to keep myself honest here. All right, Chuck. This is Chuck's Holds.
All right.
80s schlocky sci-fi edition.
Oh, okay. I could possibly do okay at this one.
I think you definitely could and, right. and likely will, but I think it's I think it's pretty fair, and I'm not going to lie. I'm going to be really honest with the audience because that's just how we do on Movie Crush. I did not get the memo that you wanted me to prepare this, so right before we recorded this, I took about 15 minutes and made this list, yeah. And I stand by it.
Thanks for doing that work at the last minute, Noel.
Of course, dude. That's what I do. I maybe would put them in a different order, but we don't have time for that. So let's go. Starting the clock. There's no clock on this.
different
how
game.
About this? This was an early Jim Carrey performance in a little movie called Earth Girls Are Easy.
I never saw that.
Okay.
I know the movie. Never saw it.
I believe it's got Gina Davis
Jeff
in it,
Goldblum,
if I'm not
I think,
mistaken.
Too, right?
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum's in it. Gina Davis, sort of a little raunchy, I think. Mm-hmm. There was some raunch in it. Might have been a boob or two.
Okay.
And yeah, that came out in 1988. I believe the very first Jim Carrey, film performance, and he's an alien, and he's covered in like blue fur.
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
I should have seen that. I was a junior in high school. That was right up my alley. Did not see it.
Yep. Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum. I forgot Jeff Goldblum. It's an out of this world, down to earth romantic comedy. That's fun.
See what they did?
Oh, I did. I see exactly what they did. All right, moving on. No check mark for you.
All right.
A little movie that was obviously riding the wave of a lot of critter movies that were, very much influenced by Gremlins. A little movie called Munchie.
Did not see Munchie.
Maybe it's Munchies. Let me just double check.
I didn't see either one.
Okay.
It was Critters as well. I didn't see Critters either.
Yeah, it was called Munchies. It was a Roger Corman production.
Oh, okay.
And it's 1987 comedy horror film starring Harvey Corman, Charlie Stratton, and Nadine Van Der Velde, directed by Tina Hirsch. And it very much... Tina Hirsch, who actually was the editor for Gremlins.
Okay.
So, and it says even here in the Wikipedia, the film features a remarkably similar plot line.
so
it's all about the creature eating.
Mm-hmm.
100% Gremlins ripoff. Okay, no check mark there.
Hey, thanks for not picking Gremlins, though, the movie that everyone saw.
Well, of course. That wouldn't be fair or fun. Okay. How about Critters?
I did not see Critters either.
Did you see Critters 2? Because that's
no,
the one I actually put on the
not.
List.
I wouldn't have known what was going on.
That's probably true. I think, if I'm not mistaken, young Leonardo DiCaprio was in one of those Critters movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, let's see.
Growing
he
things?
Was in Critters 3. Yes, Critters 3, 1991. Very young Leonardo DiCaprio was in Critters 3.
All right.
Which there was some kind of time travel plot line. A lot of these movies were simultaneously influenced by Gremlins and Terminator because there's time travel in this one and there's the Gremlins-y kind of little creatures, but it's a lot more gory. These creatures, like, they can combine their powers into a giant ball and they just roll over like herds of cattle and they just like pick them clean. It's very... it's all about the guts and the gore. It's very R-rated.
All
okay,
right.
Well, there's still plenty of time here, Chuck.
Oh, for three, that's fine.
Yeah. A little movie from the very early 80s called Rawhead Rex.
No, I've never heard of it.
Rawhead Rex was written by Clive Barker, and that's really the only reason I know about it.
Okay.
It's a monster movie from 1986, Rawhead Rex. Directed by George Pavlou and written by Clive Barker, a very young Clive Barker.
Okay.
Okay, here we go. How about Howard the Duck?
Yeah, I saw Howard the Duck.
Howard the Duck, notoriously panned.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Not a good movie.
A good movie. Weird movie based on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, actually.
Yeah, I did not know that until later on. I think it was a comic book, right?
It was a comic book, and they're actually, I believe, in one of those famous post-credit Marvel movie scenes, I believe in one of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, the character that Benicio del Toro plays, who is like called the Collector,
yeah.
He has Howard the Duck in his collection in the background.
Really? Mm-hmm. I don't think I remember that. That's funny.
All right, Chuck.
Yes.
We've got plenty of time. We've got Maximum Overdrive.
Oh, sure. Stephen King.
Stephen King.
Emilio Estevez.
Yes.
Machines come to life.
machines, specifically the trucks, but also vending machines.
There's a lawnmower, I think, too.
Lawnmower. Yeah. There's one of those turkey carving knives, the electric carving knives, you know?
Sure.
Famously, King made the trailer for this where he's in it and is clearly very coked up. And he goes,
"Oh, really?
They've told me for years, you should direct one of your own movies." Or no, for years they've been saying, "Steven, why don't you direct one of your own books or whatever?" And he goes, I finally decided, if you want to do something right, do it yourself. And he's got this like wild eyed, like crazy look in his eyes.
Ooh, boy.
Very bad movie. Emilio Estevez.
It wasn't great, but I did see it.
Okay. Next we have a movie more famous for its rip-offiness and product placement than anything. Mac and Me.
No, but you know, I know Paul Rudd and Conan O'Brien's appearances. So that's all I know that movie.
That's all you need to see.
I never saw Mac and Me.
I saw it when I was a kid. It was one of those movies at Blockbuster when you pick movies just based on the cover. They probably got a lot of business from people like thinking it, oh, this looks a lot like E.T. That's what it was totally nice. Banking on. How about Killer Clowns from Outer Space, Chuck?
I did see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a sort of a classic B-movie, cult movie.
It is. It is. It's. It still comes up on the Netflix recommendations quite often. These days. All right. We are moving on. Oh, this was actually remade recently. That's pretty funny. Hold on a second. There's a 2014 version of this, but I can't say for sure if this was, in fact, a remake, but there is a 2014 movie with the same exact name starring Zendaya, put up by Disney, called Zapped.
Yeah.
Zapped.
That was a movie, I believe Scott Baio was in that.
Correct.
And it was one of sort of those teen skin flicks where he had a superpower where he basically used it to take clothes off of girls, if I'm not mistaken.
Something
like that.
It's exactly. I mean, Chuck, the poster says it all. It's got like it's like one of those amazing illustrated posters.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's Scott Baio and whoever Willie Ames is leaning in through a window with a woman leaning out of frame and him using his like magic psychic hand to lift up her skirt.
That's right. They remade that, but how in the world do you remake that movie?
It obviously has a woman as the lead. Which maybe that was, they just decided we're going to take this sexist 80s comedy and flip the script. I know nothing about it, but it is spelled the same. It even has an exclamation mark at the end. The tagline for the movie is they're getting a little behind in their classwork.
Oh, good God.
It's pretty rough. And just if you couldn't guess already, it's about, you know, Scott Baio's character develops telekinetic abilities and uses it to basically sexually harass women.
I mean, is the new Zap a remake of that, or does it just have the same thing?
Let's see. Zapped 2014 Zendaya. It's spelled Zap. Yeah, okay. Let's see. American television film. Average 16-year-old whose mother is just remarried. They move in. Let's see. Where is the thing about... it looks more like she's got a magic remote control. It may just, I don't know that it's necessarily considered a remake at all.
Oh, it's app and Zapped is highlighted, and I think it also has to do with an app.
Ooh, geez, yep.
That sounds just as bad as the original.
It does sound just as bad, but surely
in a different way.
A little bit different way. Okay, all right, you're back, Chuck, you're back. We've got your check mark for Zapped. Here's another 80s rom-com. Well, Zapped wasn't really a rom-com. But an 80s rom-com, which I recently saw and quite enjoyed, also starring the formidable Jeff Goldblum at his Jeff Goldblumiest, a little movie called Vibes.
Cyndi Lauper, Vibes.
Cyndi Lauper.
I saw Vibes.
Psychic abilities. They go to Machu Picchu to search for some sort of like ancient relic. And that's about all I remember. But it was a lot of fun. Cyndi Lauper is actually quite a delight in the movies.
She's great.
She's fun. All right. Good deal. Vibes is a check mark. How about a little movie called Chud?
I never saw Chud. Cannibalistic humanoid underground dwellers?
Underground dwellers. Yeah, it's an acronym.
I know Chud.
Never saw Chud either, Chuck. But it's one that always comes up. All right, moving on. How about an early trauma film that I saw on TV all the time back in the day called The Toxic Avenger?
Yes, and I think that might be the only trauma film I've seen.
Same. Yeah, not really my bag, but they used to play that movie on TV all the time, and it's the saddest sequence when the poor little janitor, who's bullied like mercilessly, turns into the Toxic Avenger. He ends up like falling into a vat of toxic waste after being chased and beaten and bullied. Like, I remember being kind of troubled by it when I was young. I was like, this is a lot.
Was Reanimator trauma?
It was not. That's a different guy. I forget his name, but it's somebody who's kind of in that vein, who made a few other real, you know, schlocky kind of pictures like that.
I did see that one though.
All right, Chuck. How about a little movie starring a guy who we shall not name, called Leonard Part 6?
Bill Cosby's Leonard Part 6.
Yeah.
No, I never saw that.
Yeah, I didn't either. But it was a notorious flop.
Yes, very bad movie, supposedly.
And it sure as heck seems to me like that Pluto Nash movie that Eddie Murphy did, that also famously flopped, had to have taken some cues from this movie. Because it's about like a Space Ranger type character. And it really seemed very similar. And similarly, absolutely tanked at the box office.
Garbage movie, garbage human.
Indeed. How about The Stuff? Have you seen The Stuff?
No, never heard of The Stuff.
It's like kind of like The Blob, but a little more gory.
A little more nebulous?
A little more, yeah.
Than a blob, even?
It's some kind of product that like is like a skin cream or something. The Stuff, also known as Larry Cohen, it's a satirical science fiction horror film. And it stars Paul Sorvino. Let's see. A private detective investigates a new consumer taste treat that's absolutely delicious and just possibly lethal. It's called
which
the
means
stuff.
Very possibly lethal.
In fact, guaranteed. All right, Chuck, how about Flash? Whoa! Master of the Universe, Gordon.
Oh, Noel. Yes. Yes. 1,000 times yes.
Is that 80s or is that still late 70s?
No, it was 80s.
Okay, that was
just
that was,
a man with a man's courage. You know, nothing but a man. God, what a great song. I love
that. That's
it
Queen, right?
Yeah, I had that soundtrack LP and I saw that movie a lot.
I first was aware of that song from Tenacious D. They did a cover of
Flash. Oh, dude, he crushes
Flash.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? That movie holds up really well in the way that it holds up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Explain a little bit what you mean, well, like visually, I mean, or just the plot.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously got all the effects of the day. So it's not going to hold up in that way, but it holds up for what it was and what it was supposed to be. And it's great. It's still great. I love that movie.
I need to see it again. He's a football player, right? Isn't that the deal?
Yeah, he's a quarterback for the Jets, I think.
Okay,
the New York Jets,
it.
If I'm not mistaken, in this version.
I think for the longest time, I was always confused thinking that Flash Gordon and The Flash were the same thing, but they're definitely not.
Yeah, and there was some genuinely good, I mean, there was some schlock, but Max von Sydow as Ming the Merciless was great.
Oh, God, yes.
And
yes,
the leader of the
looking
the
like
Hawk
Anton
dudes.
LaVey.
He was great. Mm-hmm. The lead was kind of corny, but I mean, it's good. I like it. I think it holds up. Timothy Dalton was in it.
That's right. Timothy Dalton was in it. Okay. All right, Chuck, I think this is going to... So you're actually right now at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out of... We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 left to go. So you've got a chance to beat the ratio. How about Piranha?
Yeah, I saw that first Piranha.
There you go.
Was that the one John Sayles wrote, or was that a different one?
I don't know, but I know they made quite a few other ones. And let's see. Oh, Piranha's 1978, so that sort of breaks my pattern a little bit. But yeah, right. It was directed by Joe Dante, who directed Gremlins.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
That was how about that?
First sort of creature feature.
That makes sense. Okay. Isn't it funny how you get a rep for that, and then that's kind of what you do?
Yeah.
What else did Joe Dante do? He did some other stuff that wasn't creature-y. Joe Dante... Yeah, The Howling. Yeah, he did The Burbs. The Burbs.
Yeah, Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks did that Small Soldiers. Okay. Remember right. that weird movie Matinee with John Goodman?
I quite enjoyed that. Yeah, that was.
It's
Joe
interesting.
Dante.
It's a weird one, right? Joe Dante.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of an homage picture to a time in cinema, or
exactly right,
in like B movie sort of before
giant spiders situation. Yeah. Looks like he also directed Inner Space, which is the one about like shrinking classic. People down, sticking them in a body.
One wonderful movie, and a movie I don't often call for remakes, but I think they could do a great, great version of Inner Space if they kept that same tone and just had some modern day effects.
Yeah. And he directed one portion of the Twilight Zone movie. Not sure if it was the one where the people got hacked up by that helicopter that kind of made that a cursed movie.
That was John Landis.
That's right.
I am curious what Joe Dante did, though, because I loved that movie a lot. I bet you his was the kid would be my guess.
The third segment is what they're saying in Wikipedia, but I don't know which kick the can. So it looked like Steven Spielberg directed the second segment, Joe Dante the third segment, and George Miller the final act, and then Landis directed the prologue, the first segment, and the epilogue.
Yeah, I think Joe Dante's was the kid. I love that movie. It was great. Spielberg, of course, did Kick the Can. That was the sort of more magical, feel-good segment.
I've actually never seen it. I'm going to check it out.
It's good. It's really good.
Have you seen the new Twilight Zone that Jordan Peele did?
No, already canceled, though. I don't think it did too well.
Well, that's because it was only on that like paywall app. There was no way was else it? To get it. Yeah, it was all access or whatever it was called. Just don't think it's a smart move.
Right, how many no's do I have? And how many yeses do I have?
Yeah. Let's see. So far you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 yeses.
Okay.
And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 noes.
Okay. With 4 to go. Great.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Next we've got, and I know this is 70s, so it's fine. We're like on the cusp. Mm-hmm. Silent Running.
I don't think I ever saw that. I know the movie, sci-fi film. I don't think I can honestly say that I saw that.
It's got Bruce Dern in it. He's on sort of like a colony in space with like some like droids and sort of a biodome spaceship experiment, and something about like home base is going to blow it up or something like that because they're too far
right.
out. Yeah. Okay. I haven't seen it either, but I've heard it's very sci-fi, like synthy kind of vibes. And
yeah.
I think
big sci-fi movie from that era.
All right. Well, there's still a chance here, Chuck. How about Scanners?
Oh yes, of course. In fact, that's what Lauren and I covered on the show, if I'm not mistaken.
Is that right?
Oh, no. We did, now I'm just totally blanking. We did the other one.
another Cronenberg?
Yeah, what did we do? What's the other Cronenberg movie? We need to have Lauren back on here.
Yeah, she's great. It looks like you did Videodrome.
Yeah, Videodrome.
Yeah.
But yeah, classic. I saw Scanners. Scanners was... my brother and I were sort of into that Fangoria magazine kind of
early
gore effect stuff
mm-hmm.
when we could sneak it, and I snuck Scanners faux show.
And now it's just a perfectly appropriate GIF for like a blowing your mind kind of moment, you know, when that guy's head explodes.
Oh, is that a good GIF? Yeah.
It's a good GIF, just the head exploding one. All right, Chuck, we got two left. Swamp Thing, the Wes Craven Swamp Thing.
Yes, very much so. Adrian Barbeau and who was the guy in that? The guy from the Bond movies.
Who is it? I don't even think of there as being a person under that. It's the suit looks
so
cool.
No, he wasn't the Swamp Thing. He was the creepy guy.
Timothy Dalton?
No, Louis Jordan.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1982. I really think that was a really cool creature costume. The makeup and the practicals in that were pretty good.
Yeah, not bad. Adrienne Barbeau was the prettiest lady in the world, I thought, in 1981.
And she went on to do some interesting stuff. Like, she was in The Fog and Escape from New York.
She's kind of a screen queen.
Uh-huh, but then she was also in the much-beloved and killed off too soon Carnival on HBO.
Right.
Yeah, I heard they were going to make a graphic novel picking up, you know, the huge cliffhanger that like ended Carnival and left a lot of people kind of irritated. But I have to follow up on that and see if that exists. All right, Chuck.
I think if I'm not mistaken, you can count. I think I'm one up with one to go. So,
oh, good.
Okay. Is that right?
I think so. Let's see. So with the nose, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sorry. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 nose. And yep, that's right. All right. Here we go.
So
last one.
The worst I'll do is 10 and 10.
That's exactly right. But I think you might clinch it.
All right, Noel. Let's hear it.
All right. A little known movie.
Okay.
Directed by an auteur. It's not little known. I'm joking. It's very, very known, but it was much maligned. And a guy never really did anything like this ever again. It's definitely outside of his particular canon and something that he kind of talks about very negatively, if at all. A movie called Dune.
Fuck, dude. I never saw Dune.
You never saw Dune.
I never saw Dune. I'll say it. I'm Chuck Bryant. I have a movie podcast and I've never seen Dune.
It's interesting. It's very clear they ran out of money and the movie it's one of those things where you immediately have a red flag because there's all of this voiceover exposition at the beginning where you're like, this was clearly added in post. And you know, they obviously were like, cause it's a complex world where there's a lot of weird politics and a lot of words that you have to kind of, you know, buy into like the language of the different things that exist in this world. So they, you know, the very beginning of the movie, there's this whole massive exposition that's with voiceover over like just shots of the kind of planet. But yeah, it's weird. There's a couple of interesting things that happen in it. Lynch obviously gave it his all, but it wasn't the kind of movie you'd think he would do. And I'm not quite sure why he did it, but yeah. I'm really looking forward to the Villeneuve version that hopefully we'll definitely see that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the time there were just so many bad reviews of it as a kid. I just remember thinking like, I don't need to see this. I heard it was really boring for a sci-fi movie. And I think that turned me off of it and I just never did it. And I never read the book or anything. So it wasn't like a Dune guy.
Totally.
So yeah, definitely going to see the new one though.
It is boring. It's absolutely boring. And even the book is kind of boring. It's a lot of like, you know, like I said, like world building, but there's not always a ton of action. And if there is, there's a lot of dead space in between the action. So I think Villeneuve is probably going to knock it up a notch because I just loved what he did with the Blade Runner universe. And it reminds me of that kind of vibe. Chuck, you did 50-50, man. That's
10 and 10. I'll take
it. That's not bad.
I will take it, dude. Thank you for doing those on the fly.
Of course.
I think that was a quality list. I wish I could say I have some movies to add to my list to watch, but I don't know if Munchies and Critters are going to, I'm kind of ashamed I saw Zapped.
You're not going to run out and see Mac and Me right now?
I don't think so.
I think all you need is those Paul Rudd clips really going to give you the whole picture. Yeah, the whole thing about that movie is it famously was like sponsored by McDonald's.
Right.
And it's got all this McDonald's product placement. Even his name is Mac. He's named after the Big Mac, you know, so.
That's pretty, is his last name Donald?
He doesn't have a last name, Chuck. He's a space alien.
Well, shit. I didn't know they only had first names.
It was just the nickname that the kid gave him, you know, like E.T.
Well, T is the last name. His first name is Extra.
That's fair. That's fair.
Hey, yo, come here, Extra.
Hey, get over here.
Remember how they said that all the time? All right,
I do.
Well, that was a lot of fun, Noel.
Yeah, man.
10 for 10, I'll take it. And that'll wrap it up for this one. So we'll see everyone next week.
Bye.
Movie Crush is produced and written by Charles Bryant and Noel Brown, edited and engineered by Seth Nicholas Johnson, and scored by Noel Brown here in our home studio at Ponce City Market, Atlanta, Georgia, for iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.